evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Tuesday, March 19, 2024. A South Sudanese economic expert says the conflict in Sudan has crippled South Sudan's oil industry.
Once the foreign exchange market, which is already sensitive to the revenues from the oil, then now push up prices. But also these commodities are unfortunately being imported. So we are also depending not only on oil, but also we are depending on imports.
And Juba, authorities at Juba Airport have canceled flights to Roeng administrative area after a plane crash.
Some of the flights now are cancelled not to go to that Upper Nile region because of the bad weather that takes place there. And the plane was just a cargo plane, was not a passenger.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. A Russian-made Antonov 26 plane destined to Yida in South Sudan's Roeng administrative area crashed this morning. The Director General of Juba International Airport says five people on board, including the crew, survived. He blames the incident on bad weather and has cancelled flights to Roeng administrative area. For VOA News, Dennis Longonyi reports from Juba.
Authorities at Juba International Airport say the plane crashed at Yida airstrip in Roeng administrative area on Tuesday. Kur Kwol, the Director General of Juba International Airport, says the plane was carrying goods for the South Sudan military.
This morning around 6:18 a.m., the Antonov 26 took off going to Yida. On board, there was five people, four crew and one passenger, and was intended to land it around 7:57 in Yida, but got crashed before landed. I think it was overshooting because there was a bad visibility in that area. And not that that area alone is covered even Marakal. So some of the flights now are cancelled not to go to that Upper Nile region because of the bad weather that takes place there. And the plane was just a cargo plane, was not a passenger.
Lurwai Kong, the spokesperson, South Sudan People's Defense Forces, SSPDF, said the military is working on a complete report about the crash. He did not disclose details about the plane's cargo.
Yes, there was a plane crash, but it's still waiting for official report from the director of the airport. Give me more information. Once I get more information, I'll let you know. It is a process. It's waiting officially for a report from the director of the Air Force, giving details.
Giza Moses, a civil society activist at a humanity and community empowerment organization, says airport authorities in Juba allow old planes to operate in the country. Last month, a passenger plane returning from Sudan experienced engine problems during landing at Malakal Airport. Moses says there has been no accountability for previous plane crashes, adding that most passengers in South Sudan don't trust local aviation companies.
The issue of plane crash in South Sudan is something that is very concerning to us. It has been there over the years. Protection, ensuring that these planes qualify to fly, is something that we are not sure of. Because if we are sure of, other countries have more aircraft than us around us in the region. They do not have the number of plane crashes that we have in South Sudan. With these several plane crash, we have never seen any public investigation report published by the Civil Aviation Authority for public consumption. A plane will crash, experts will go there, they will collect evidences, and then we don't see what happens.
Gizam blames the Civil Aviation Authority for allowing overloaded planes to fly. Kur Kwol says the accident at Yida airstrip was not caused by overloading or poor maintenance. He says the plane's crew left Juba International Airport without checking the weather for its route.
They did not even ask to confirm that they were saying, because you know we are in March now, so you don't expect any, because you see the weather is very clean and all that thing, but it happened. That one is just a normal thing that can happen like that, so people cannot get worried about such a thing. Like now, it was not a chemical, it was just a bad weather who caused that incident. People say the plane is bad or not. The plane was good.
In 2022, a committee formed to investigate a plane crash in Gondokoro village recommended suspending and revoking flight licenses for several aircraft, such as the AN-26, AN-24, AN-28, AN-30, Hawkers HS-748, and the LET 410 UVP. For VOA News, I'm Dennis Logonyi reporting from Juba.
Sudan's Ministry of Petroleum has officially declared a force Majeure in a letter sent to oil companies in South Sudan and Sudan. This declaration absolves Sudan from its obligation to transport South Sudan's crude oil to the marine terminal in Port Sudan. Sudan's oil minister, Mohyeddin Naim Mohammed Said, cited oil flow restrictions and the jailing of crude oil in the pipeline caused by ruptures in conflict zones, likely stemming from the ongoing clashes between Sudan's armed forces and the rapid support forces. South Sudan's economy has recently experienced a significant downturn. The country canceled its crude sales for February and March. President Kiir also dismissed Finance Minister Bak Barnaba Chol over the weekend and appointed Awoh Daniel as the new finance minister with a mandate to address the faltering economy. My colleague Nabil Biagio spoke to Lual Deng Achuek, a prominent South Sudanese economist and former minister in what was then Sudan, to discuss these developments and possibly measures to tackle severe economic crisis in South Sudan.
The economy was already weak, so the external factors tend to have more impact on the performance of an economy, which was already dependent on oil. And so the shutdown, or temporary shutdown, of the pipeline, but it's something was expected. We have been lucky that we are now almost approaching a year since the war broke out in Sudan on April 15th, 2023. An economy which is dependent on one commodity, and that commodity is also dependent on one route of exports, is very, very vulnerable.
For an economy that has only oil as the source of foreign currency and accounts for all the exports of the country, how devastating this is, and what should we expect in the coming weeks and months?
Well, we already seen, so not expecting. We already seen the way the markets have reacted. Our inflation is more affected. This is a pass-through in the how the foreign exchange market operates. So once the foreign exchange market, which is already sensitive to the revenues from the oil, then now push up prices. But also these commodities are unfortunately being imported. So we are also depending not only on oil, but also we are depending on imports. We are not producing many things to satisfy our domestic needs. So yes, it's devastating, and authorities are trying their best to find ways and means of resolving it.
About resolving it, with the inflation that South Sudan is experiencing right now, we are seeing unprecedented numbers in terms of the exchange rate between the U.S. dollar and the South Sudanese pound. The president just changed his finance minister, and there's a lot of pressure on that ministry and the central bank and the government in general to rein in this inflation. What kind of financial or monetary policy that we need right now to alleviate the situation?
The way out, of course, and we have come back with, is to focus on agriculture. You know, make agriculture the engine of our economy and sustainable of livelihood. Now, coming back to your question, there are some measures, but they don't. And since you're calling me, you said from Voice of America, VOA, you just look at how long it took the Biden administration, the first economy in the world, to bring down the inflation. It took some time, and it is now under, I believe, under 4%, 4.1, something like that, or 5%, compared to where it was at the time when President Biden took over. So again, here is my view, is talking to our people, is that let's put measures in place. It's not enough to change people here and there, but stay the course. And as long as the Minister of Finance has the trust of the president, because at the end of the day, he's the president, just as in the U.S. So if the Minister of Finance have the confidence of the president and also be open with the president to tell him what is required, what should not be done at this stage, and all those things, I think we can also come up with a client. What do we do over there? Like the new minister, what will he do over there? His first 100 days, for instance, to calm the market. And I don't know whether you have, I came, but it was issued on the 16th of this month. That was today, 19th, so what, 3 days ago, by the Minister of Energy and Petroleum of Sudan, setting a force majeure where the pipeline cannot carry our crude from Block 3 and 7.
Yes, and there was some gelling in the crude oil.
Yeah, gelling and all that kind of thing, yeah. So it's something beyond our control. So, but what, in my view, so to come back to your question, it would be, I hope the minister and also but made it clear to the president that what we need to do, hoping that we will restore the situation, will improve, but the conflict continues in Sudan because with the rapid support force and the Sudan armed forces and along the pipeline, so there's some segments of the pipelines are controlled by different of the two. And so Juba has to kind of strengthen his communication and talking with the two, because we cannot eliminate any party.
That's Lual Deng Atwek, director of the Juba-based Ebony Center and former Sudan oil minister. He spoke with my colleague, Nabil Biagio, from Juba earlier today. Authorities in South Sudan's Upper Nile State say they are working with the commissioner of Ayot County in Jonglei State and the SPLM-IO leadership to release women and children the White Army abducted in Tonga, Fashoda, Kodok, and other areas during intercommunal violence in 2022. Mamer Abraham Kwart reports for VOA from Malakal.
Colonel Jacob Nial is the SPLM-IO coordinator in Upper Nile and Jonglei State. He says a spiritual leader called Makwach is demanding food at an assembly point for returning abducted children.
But he said, you bring food for the children who will be brought from different areas. When the food arrives, then I will call all the wire who abducted the children. Then they will bring them together. Organization who will take the children back to their mothers is the one who will take responsibility.
James Chualjiak, the commissioner of Ayot County, says more than 40 children abducted last year by the militia group known as the White Army should be reunited with their families in Upper Nile.
The children we adopted at the time Makwach went to some areas. The number that may be present may be the same as the number of children I returned to Malakal last year. I was the one who took 40 children to Malakal.
Jack says one woman will be returned to Greater Pibor administrative area this week. He says children from the Chilu community are said to be among those kidnapped, but the total number is not clear because they are still with individual members of the White Army.
We have one woman from the site of Murle here with our children. On Tuesday, she may go to Bor, and from Bor to Pibor. This is what will happen. But the children of Shiluk are mobilized and will be returned to their families. However, I do not know the exact number of children present now.
Tut Poishluak, the director for child protection at Upper Nile State Ministry of Gender, Child and Social Welfare, says more than 200 children and women were abducted in Tonga and surrounding areas in 2022.
Now the government is working hard in order to bring those kids whom were taken by the corporations or the collective responsibility from the government of Jonglei State and Upper Nile State. Together with our partner UNICEF and UNICEF, we are trying our level best in order to bring those young kids.
Luak Haji's parents, whose children were abducted to be patient, adding that the exact number of women, girls and boys who were abducted is still unclear. The children were abducted in 2022 after the White Army attacked Hagwelek forces in Tonga, Fashoda and Kodok. The government of Upper Nile State sent a team to Ayot to negotiate the return of 41 children the White Army abducted in Lake Nasser. UNICEF says child abduction is a threat to children and women across South Sudan due to intercommunal violence. The UN says thousands of children are separated from their families, leaving them vulnerable to violence, abuse, and exploitation. For VOA News, I am Amir Abraham Kuat in Malakal.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has agreed to send a delegation to the U.S. to discuss Israeli plans. Find out why after the break.
Hello, listener of South Sudan in Focus. We have an exciting new segment dubbed Words of Wisdom. We want to hear your thoughtful proverbs that echo through your community. This is another chance for you to share wisdom from your roots. All you need to do is record a proverb in a language of your choice, tell us its English translation and what it means. Keep it brief, authentic, and represent your community. Your recorded proverb shall be sampled on South Sudan in Focus every Wednesday. Send your recording via our WhatsApp number, +1 202 630 8011. That is +1 202 630 8011.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Analysts in West Africa are raising concerns about U.S. military operations across the Sahel after Niger ended military cooperation with the United States on Saturday. The U.S. has hundreds of troops stationed at a drone base in northern Niger and has been helping with regional counterterrorism operations against jihadist groups. Timothy Obiezu reports for VOA from Abuja.
Saturday's announcement from Niger's National Council for the Safeguard of the Homeland came days after a U.S. delegation visited Niger, the second American team to visit since a group of military officers seized power last July. It remains unclear what prompted the decision to cut military ties with Washington, but Council spokesman Colonel Abdul Abdurrahman said U.S. flights over Niger's territory in recent weeks were illegal. He also said the U.S. delegation had accused Niger of a secret deal to supply uranium to Iran and showed, quote, condescending attitude against the government and people of Niger, end quote. Niger plays a pivotal role in the U.S. counterterrorism operations in Africa's Sahel region and hosts a major military air base in the city of Agadez. Security expert Saheed Shehu says there will be implications for regional security.
Certainly we'll see a spike of security incidents in that area because the bad guys are also looking at developments. But I believe it's not going to last because America is not going to sleep. Certainly America is going back to the drawing table to see how can they accommodate, you know, the complaint that is made by Niger and come back.
The U.S. has invested millions of dollars in its security operations in the region and has helped train Niger's military, some of whom took part in the ousting of President Mohamed Bazoum last July. The U.S. State Department Sunday said in a post on X that it was in touch with Niger's military junta. In October, U.S. authorities officially designated the military takeover in Niger as a coup and curbed security and development support to the nation. Sam Amadi, a director of the School of Social and Political Thought, says Niger's government could be looking elsewhere for a security alliance.
Well, I think it's a loss because they've spent time, money, by investing in that capability in Niger. So I see it as a loss. And I think they will lean towards Russia. But the question is, nobody knows how effective it will be.
Niger, like neighboring Mali and Burkina Faso, turned to Russia for security support after last July's coup. In December, Niger ended its security partnership with the European Union, prompting France to withdraw its troops from the country. Shehu says the various moves by the junta are a negotiation strategy.
It will affect the general security in the area, but at the same time, I think the earlier agreement was more in favor of the United States and those countries involved. I do not see this as the end of Niger-U.S. relationship, but they are sending a signal that we need more of a collaboration of equals, you know, going forward. What I see happening later is that, you know, the kind of cooperation has to be in a kind of that is mutually beneficial. So I think the message that Niger is sending is to show America that, look, we could go elsewhere.
The U.S. and France had a combined force of 2,500 troops in Niger before the military takeover. It's not clear when or if Niger will ask the U.S. to withdraw its troops as it did with France. Timothy Obiezu, VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has agreed to send a delegation to the U.S. to discuss Israeli plans for ground invasion into Gaza's crowded city of Rafah, a plan the White House has described as a mistake. Meanwhile, aid groups warn that famine is looming for the besieged enclave. VOA's Anita Paul reports from the White House.
As Gaza smolders, so do tensions between Washington and Jerusalem over what happens next. Israeli forces on Monday entered Gaza's largest hospital, claiming they were targeting senior Hamas militants. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu next plans a major ground operation into the crowded city of Rafah, something President Joe Biden opposes unless there is a political and humanitarian plan. Speaking by phone Monday, the two leaders agreed to have teams meet in Washington in the coming days to discuss the situation before Israel makes a move. National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan.
Our view is that there are ways for Israel to prevail in this conflict, to secure its long-term future, to end the terror threat from Gaza, and not smash into Rafah. That's what we're going to present in this integrated way when this team comes.
Israel's leader was more sweeping in his summary of the discussion, saying that he and Biden talked about the latest developments in the war, including Israel's commitment to achieving all the goals of the war, the elimination of Hamas, the release of all the hostages, and the promise that Gaza will no longer pose a threat to Israel, while providing the necessary humanitarian aid that helps achieve these goals.
We talked about the latest developments in the war, including Israel's commitment to achieve all the goals of the war, the elimination of Hamas, the release of all our hostages, and the promise that Gaza will no longer pose a threat to Israel, while providing the necessary humanitarian aid that helps achieve these goals.
United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres warned Monday that every second matters.
Palestinians in Gaza are enduring horrifying levels of hunger and suffering. This is the highest number of people facing catastrophic hunger ever recorded by the Integrated Food Security Classification System anywhere, anytime.
The European Union's top diplomat, Josep Borrell, went further, pointing an accusatory finger at Israel.
It is unacceptable. Starvation is used as a weapon of war. Yes. Starvation is used as a weapon of war. Let's say that. And it's not a question of a lack of sufficient supplies.
Israel has accused Hamas militants, who launched the October 7th killing spree that sparked the conflict, of disrupting aid convoys. Analysts say that as Israel's main guarantor of security, the U.S. will pull lessons from its history and apply diplomatic pressure before resorting to putting conditions on military aid. John Alterman is director of the Middle East program at the Center for Strategic and International Studies.
The United States concluded after more than 20 years of fighting in the Middle East that the military piece is only the beginning. And what really matters is, can you take care of the population? Can you persuade the population that there's a better future if they follow the course you want to take?
A strategy complicated as Israel continues to relive the horrors of the deadliest day for the Jewish people in decades. Alterman again.
The discussion in Israel is still about the threat that comes from Hamas, the sense that we have to make sure that October 7th never happens again, and I think a lingering sense that Palestinians are overwhelmingly supportive of Hamas, and therefore compassion won't get you a willingness to coexist. Compassion will mean that you're just helping people survive who will fight Israel in the future. Where that gets settled, I don't know, but I do think that Israel has a history of adhering to laws of war.
But as these powerful players prepare to meet far from the horrors of life in Gaza, aid officials are asking, how much longer can civilians go on like this? Anita Powell, VOA News, the White House.
Inspired by her grandfather's recipes and the flavors of Iran, Zahara Tabatabia is brewing craft beer that highlights the rich history of fermentation in the Middle East. Through her unique brews like the Persian Blue and collaboration with Iranian designers back home, beer is a tribute to her heritage and a celebration of Iranian culture and creativity. Aaron Feder brings us the story from Brooklyn, New York.
My family came originally from Iran to the States to attend university, and they had the intention of going back to Iran, but while they were here, the revolution and the uprising happened in Iran, and they decided to stay in the United States. I just started homebrewing at home and creating recipes that had a lot of inspiration and influence from the flavors of the Middle East. My grandfather used to make beer and wine, and there's a very rich history of fermentation and beer brewing specifically in Iran, and so that's what really sparked my interest. All morning, I've been doing my route and the logistics for my deliveries, and so far I have done 5 deliveries. I got one more in the neighborhood, and then I'm going to go load up the car again because this car can only fit so much. So I'll go back, load up again, and continue on the route. What took me from homebrewing to bringing this to market was me really educating myself about the history of beer and alcohol in the Middle East and realizing that a lot of people don't realize that there was ever a connection between the two. And so it was really important for me to highlight that and show people that we have this very rich history that we do not want to be erased from our country. So my first brew was Persian Blue. It's brewed with a blue salt that comes directly from Iran. That one was really an homage to my family who did put salt in their beer before they drank it.
Yeah, this is the first time I've ever tried Persian beer, and it's phenomenal. It's changed our household.
I had to find a brewery that would accept me, accept my recipes, allow me to brew there, because obviously I didn't have my own facility and I still don't. And so I reached out, just kind of cold called a lot of different breweries, brewery owners, to ask for space in brewing these recipes. And that's how I landed here at Flagship Brewery.
What's special about back home beer is Zara. She's using, you know, the suppliers and ingredients that we use a lot, but in each one of her beers, she adds something unique. And that's what I think really brings out the story of her brand.
The core beers that I have, which are the Persian Blue, the Sumac Goza, and the Orange Blossom IPA, those were all designed by a young woman who lives in Tehran. And it was important for me to feature Iranian women as the designers of the can because I wanted to make sure that I was authentic in what I was trying to do, give them the opportunity to show how talented they are and how creative they can be and how amazing Iranian women can be when given the opportunity.
Well, I was told beer and music go hand in hand. That's all we prepared for you this Tuesday, March 19, 2024. We now leave you with the song Asogoro by Amy J. Yore. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and engineer, Adrius Regis, we wish you a lovely evening. Remember to join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Kina dadda yo, wa kwa roma biya bire. Kina dadda yo.